Thank you, Tim. So, yes, I'm work for the Food and Drug Administration, and that's my qualifier down here at the bottom, that anything I say today is my own opinion and doesn't represent the FDA's. Just by background, I have a master's in international history, a master's in international management, so I'm trained in international business, and I did that for the first part of my career, and then went to the Food and Drug Administration for the last 12 years, have been working there. And I came into FDA with a trader's point of view of how things would work, and I was sold on conformity assessment and one test and one product, you know, and a product goes out worldwide. And then I saw the other side when I joined the FDA, and it was really quite an eye-opener. So now I'm very much middle of the road, very cautious of these trade deals and what things can happen, but still optimistic that trade can be beneficial. So what I'm going to talk about today is the investor-state dispute settlement mechanism. You've heard earlier speaker talk about that. I'm going to talk about my study objective and the way that I did the study, and the potential and real impact of ISDS on public health. I'm going to talk about two case studies very briefly, and at least one of them has already been mentioned, and I'm going to echo what's already been said. And then I'm going to talk about some specific public health recommendations, policy recommendations that I would like to make. So we've talked about ISDS. It's an international legal instrument. It's either part of a bilateral investment treaty. And by the way, a BIT is probably the entry-level trade agreement that a country would sign with another country. It just sets the stage for greater trading in the future. And then you have a free trade agreement, which, of course, is much more complicated. And it grants the right of an investing company to sue a government for compensation if the company feels its rights are violated. And again, as has been talked about, there's more than 3,000 trade agreements. These date back to the 1960s, and there's more than 600 ISDS cases. So there was a question earlier about how do these cases go on? So ISDS cases are held under arbitration under either the ICSID World Bank rules or the United Nations Commission on International Trade Law rules. And then you can see the varying and growing fora for hearing these arbitrations. And the reason it's growing is because there's more of a market for this, and these organizations get paid for doing the arbitration. So you can see a whole variety. ICSID is probably the one that's used most, but Stockholm Chamber of Commerce is also used. An up-and-coming one is the Permanent Court of Arbitration. So I took a look at the cases from 1987 to 2015. And as has been mentioned, there's over 600. I counted 642. I had to go to multiple databases to get the number of cases and get the details on them. And I split them out according to what I found in terms of most, about 20% of them are oil, gas, and mining. About 15.5% are electric power and other energy. Then there's other industry, and that would include a lot of the things that we're interested in, like food and water and sanitation and so on. And then you get into finance, information and communication, and the various things here. And lastly is probably agriculture, fishing, and forestry. So the criticisms of the ISDS, it's unnecessary. It's another venue for companies to sue governments. My view on that is that it is helpful. In terms of looking back at the history of international trade, there was a lot of expropriation in the 1970s and 1980s that threatened U.S. assets. So I can understand from the trader's point of view why they would want this kind of protection. However, as I'll point out later, I think that this is getting to be overused and even misused. And I'll talk one of the cases that really is a misuse of the ISDS mechanism, in my opinion. So companies are taking advantage. You've heard about forum shopping. If you can't get it done through the courts, then you try and get it done through the arbitration. There's no appeal on arbitration. That is true. The decisions are made by arbitrators. So you have one party puts forward its arbitrator, another party puts forward another arbitrator, and then there's agreement on the third arbitrator. And those people are generally lawyers, judges. They are not experienced in public health issues. They get support from lawyers that are experienced, but they are not directly knowledgeable, really, about these issues that we're all familiar with. And so they come to the table, I think, at a bit of a disadvantage in terms of looking at these issues. And then I'll also point out there's a lack of transparency. As I went through these cases, a lot of them were sealed in terms of what the result was, whether payments were made out to companies, that sort of thing. So it's very difficult to quantify, in my opinion, it's very difficult to quantify what the actual damages are. So my study objective was to better understand the effect that ISDS has had on public health by examining the cases. And I used, first of all, I built a database of all the known ISDS cases. Then I used a very broad definition of cases that would directly relate to public health. For example, anything that was related to food, water, sanitation, pharmaceuticals, tobacco, alcohol, to parse out what was directly related to public health and what was indirectly related. Kelly, you mentioned the Lone Pine Reserve one. That's one that I thought of as I looked at in the database, but I also felt that it was kind of hard to quantify the direct impact on public health. So that's the one that one of the ones that I left out. Just to give you an example of my thinking on this. And then I went in and I analyzed the cases that I had isolated to determine whether the state lost and what the cost of the compensation was. So my findings, again, there's no single database of cases. You can find many of them in the UNCTAD ISDS database, but they're not all there. It's not up to date, and you cannot find very many details on the cases there. I mentioned the number of cases. I found that 88 cases, or 13.7%, were directly related to public health issues. And the way it broke out was highest number were cases pending, and we've seen the increase in cases over the years, so, and these take several years to play out, so it's not surprising that there's a number of high cases pending. The state has won in 23 of the cases. The investors have won in 20. And then there's a variety of cases being settled, cases being discontinued. Sometimes the investor doesn't have the resources to carry the case through the process, so they decide to abandon it. There have been three cases where in favor of neither the state nor the investor, and one which information is not available about what happened. And so one thing we need to think about is if a country enters into arbitration, it will be resource intensive. One of the examples that I will use of the Apotex Canada versus FDA or the US case, you know, we put a lot of full-time equivalent resources into that, particularly with highly paid lawyers at the FDA who are spending hundreds of hours on this case. If the country loses the arbitration case, the country will have to pay compensation, money that might have been used for other purposes. So that really gets at the lesser income, middle income countries that can't afford to do these kind of cases. And then there's the question, and I really haven't seen this yet, but it's interesting, of whether ISDS causes what's called regulatory chill, or countries backing off in terms of bringing in new regulation or even applying the regulations that they have because they're concerned that they're going to be taken to arbitration. That's going to take a little bit more research. Talking about the Apotex case. So this, in my opinion, was a really egregious case that it shouldn't have even been considered. And you know, I'm partial, of course, because I work for the FDA. But Apotex basically challenged two decisions that we made under NAFTA. They sought $1.5 billion in damages, and there were two parts to the case. One was concerned their facilities, where we found repeated good manufacturing practice deficiencies, and they would not take care of them. And so we put an import alert on their drugs coming into the U.S. And they said that damaged their bottom line. And then there was a second one where they challenged our decision to grant approval for a generic version of the antidepressant Zoloft to another generic company. And they challenged our thinking process on how we made the decision that it should go to another company instead of to Apotex. And so we lawyered up, and we went to arbitration, thankfully, and we won on both the parts of the cases. And they ended up having to pay $1.5 million in arbitration and legal costs. So that's a good example of where, you know, a country has stood up and won a case. And I think it's, you know, this is almost emblematic of, I hope there aren't any trial lawyers in the audience, but, you know, almost emblematic of the trial lawyers that are chasing ambulances looking for a case and trying to get remedy. And then another case, the Philip Morris, Asia, Hong Kong, and where we had Australia pass their law on tobacco plain packaging. Philip Morris took Australia to arbitration in 2012. That case is still in process at the Permanent Court of Arbitration. And in addition, and this is also gets at me because, you know, I'm very much partial to countries deciding for themselves what they need to do in terms of protecting their population, is that the WTO has put together, there were disputes brought by five different countries against Australia, and they put that together into one dispute settlement body, and so they're looking at that right now against Australia. And so Australia's statement is they'll no longer sign trade agreements with ISDS provisions. And I guess we'll see what happens with the TPP in terms of that. But we saw towards the end of the negotiations a lot of pushback from smaller, medium-sized countries that I think can really influence the way this dispute settlement mechanism is used. So my recommendations, just after looking at this data, is that first, for ministries of health, that if there's any bilateral and multilateral investment treaty or trade agreement, that they work with the Ministry of Finance and Trade to seek a carve-out for public health and environmental regulations. I think that's vital, and I think that's been successful in some cases. And so I'd like to see that continue because I don't think that there should be... I do revert back to what the agreement has been in terms of trade of a country determining its own requirements for public health and safety. For the greater public health community, I feel that we need to get more organized around this issue. WHO has a unit on trade, foreign policy, diplomacy, and health, but they don't have the resources to advocate for our interests. And for regulatory agencies, my colleagues in Canada and Australia understand that when your country agrees to ISDS, that you're going to have to defend your regulatory decisions. And so you better back that up with science, because that's what's going to carry the day in these cases. And for anybody who's studying trade and public health, we need to really determine what the real effects are on public health. And, you know, is there regulatory chill? What are the costs? That type of thing. So there's a lot more work to be done in this area. My summing up is just basically ISDS is here to stay. It's not going to go away. But it is up to an individual country whether they want to sign on to it or not. Now, I'll give you a little... It's been widely mentioned in the press years and years ago when we were doing a free trade agreement with Australia. One thing I'll share with you is that the Australians came to the U.S. and said, we would like to have more beef sold in the U.S. And what would you like? And I'm basically summing up the conversations. And the U.S. said, we think your pharmaceutical reimbursement scheme could be paying a little bit more for drug research. And that is the way trade works. It's not a consideration of whether something is proper or not. It's neither immoral or amoral. It's right down the middle of, can we get more trade? ISDS right now, I think, is having an unintended impact on public health regulatory decisions, and we need to better quantify that. As an epidemiologist, you look at this as Apotex and Philip Morris are the sentinel cases that signal future types of issues to come. And we can influence how ISDS is used if we work more closely together with other countries, with other public health practitioners, with other regulatory agencies, and we can influence how this goes works out. And thank you very much, and if you have any questions.